शिला गुरुदेव की जय, श्रीमन महाप्रभु की जय, श्री हरि नाम संकीर्तन की जय, श्री श्री दौजी गोपाल की जय, गौर भक्त वृंद की जय, गौर प्रेमानंद हरि हरि वो। सो प्रणाम टू ऑल ऑफ यू, गुड मॉर्निंग हियर इन माधुबन, टू ऑल ऑफ यू कनेक्टेड, good morning, good afternoon, good night, whatever you may be. And I think that's the same. Let's turn it up. It's the same. And for me it's better like this. Thank you. So again, our Guru Maharaj has not been able to connect this Sunday because of some technical issues with Wi-Fi. So we hope he will be present in the following weekend. So unfortunately for all of you, here I am again, so I count on your prayers and blessings so we can make the best of this meeting. So again, we are all here invited to participate in Ishtagosti, which is a Sanskrit term which has to do with the presenting of questions and the interaction of questions and answers, which is a very ancient and classical way of learning and inquiring and trying to get further clarification, further enlightenment about those things that, as our Guru Maharaj says, we may have thought that we already understood. And when the topic is further developed and further questions are presented, you may realize, oh, I did not understand the topic as I thought. No, now I feel I understand. And in the next Q&A session, you realize again, oh, I didn't understand either. So in this way, we progress to different layers of ignorance and further learning and enlightenment. So all of you are invited to present whatever question you may have or whatever topic you may like to hear about. I may give priority to some of the ones present here physically with the permissions of the online ones. So there, here Sakyarati Devi is raising her hand. So yes. Okay, so for those of you who did not hear the question connected online, Sakyarati Devi asked some if we could speak a little bit about the concept of sadhu sangha or satsanga, which means basically sacred association, sacred company, and how that plays out also in the context of community life, and how maintain the flame of sadhu sangha, if you will, if you are spending some time in a community and then returning to your respective places, and how does sadhu sangha place itself out in those particular situations and so on. So you may share some ideas about this. Sadhu sangha ki jai. So to begin with, of course, needless to say, but always important to remember, for us sadhu sangha is crucial in our particular bhakti tradition. And the notion of sadhu sangha or satsanga is not only seen as a bridge, but as a destination unto itself, as we spoke some days ago while narrating the lila, the bridge built by the monkeys for Ramchandra and so on, and Govardhan and so on. So sadhu sangha is not only a vehicle or a medium to obtain a ultimate goal in which there is no further sadhu sangha, but in our particular devotional worldview, whatever we are embracing now in practice as a means, it only augments in the goal. Basically, that's our notion, not only with sadhu sangha, but with whatever we are doing now in the context of bhakti, not in the context of something. So whatever we are doing now, like chanting or worshipping or serving or cooking or cleaning, if you will, in the goal, when we attain the ultimate situation, all those things will only blossom and flourish that much more. So that's our particular prospect, if you will. No? We are not trying to do something as a practice that at some point will be rejected in order to embrace something higher, because in our bhakti perspective, there is no anything higher than bhakti. So bhakti will only promote further bhakti. That's what the Srimad Bhagavatam mentions. Bhaktya, sanjataya bhaktya, which means bhakti comes from bhakti and bhakti goes to bhakti, if you will. Bhakti only can come from bhakti, and bhakti can only transform into further bhakti, because there is nothing higher than bhakti, which is the very essence of Krishna's Swarup Shakti, or the most intimate energy or potency of Bhagavan. So again, Sadhu Sangha is no exception to this rule, since there is such a crucial aspect of bhakti. Sadhu Sangha Nama Kirtan Bhagavat Shravam Matura Basu Srimurtira Shradaya Sevan. When Rupa Goswami enumerates all the principles of Sadhu Sangha, he mentions 59 first, and then he kind of summarizes all them in 5. And the first of those 5 is Sadhu Sangha, making an important point. Associate with the holy. Because, as we always say, we are a product of our environment. So whatever the environment is there, that we transform in. And that's the very implication of tatastha. Tatastha is a Sanskrit term that speaks about who we are, or speaks about who we can be. And that's a real question. Not so much who I am, but what's all that I can become in. Because actually our constitution has atomic particles of consciousness. That's, according to Vedanta, our very constitution. We are atomic particles of consciousness. And in that situation, we are prone to be influenced by one environment or the other. What we may call Maya Shakti or Swarup Shakti. So we know the results of being influenced by Maya Shakti, which means material energy, which ends in basically engrossment in a particular sense of identity, which does not endure and creates only fear born out of duality. Bhayam dvitiya vinivesata syat, says the Srimad Bhagavatam. Out of duality, out of absorption in duality, fear arises. So the idea is to use our potential. We are units of potentiality. So if we get closer to a higher environment, we tend to imbibe those particular elements, and we tend to incorporate them in our own nature, DNA, if you will, the ultimate DNA. So Sadhu Sangha means basically that, the best possible thing we can do with our tatastha constitution. Get closer to the holy, to the sacred, and becoming, how do you say, sacralized ourselves. That's our potential. We have a very bright potential, and of course we have the potential of doing the greatest nonsense on earth. And we know we may have immediate experience of both of the two. When we make proper choices, take proper responsibility, enlighten decisions, that takes to a particular avenue. But when we act according to avidya, or lack of education, that may end in a considerable headache, to say the least. So Sadhu Sangha means that. And again, Sadhu Sangha for us is not only, okay, I get closer to enlightened people, so I get some like from them, and then I go on my own and I don't care for the enlightened ones anymore. No, on the contrary, the more you become enlightened, the more you appreciate the enlightened ones, and the more you become one with them, if you will, in purpose. Chaitanya Charitamrita makes this point. It says, Krishna bhakti janma mol hoy sadhu sangha, Krishna prem janme tenho punar mukya anga. So basically it says, Krishna bhakti janma mol hoy sadhu sangha. The birth, root birthplace of bhakti is sadhu sangha. You know how what follows after that. Bhakti is not inherent. But then second line, the main one here, is Krishna prem janme tenho punar mukya anga. Even when you reach the topmost goal of devotional practice, which is divine love, that association, that holy company, becomes even more prominent, most important in your life. Mukya anga becomes the main aspect of your daily life in eternity. So the more we get closer to the goal, the more all the things that we are doing now augment. That's an important thing to understand, because if you are not very happy doing what you are doing now, well, you will be less happy doing that for eternity. So better you get along properly with whatever you are doing, because that's our prospect. We want to serve, to sing, to worship, to associate forever. So if that represents a problem nowadays, imagine if you project, multiply that for forever. So it's important to know how to deal with that. So that's kind of the question here. Sadhu Sangha and in community life, which is of course Sadhu Sangha in motion, if you will. Because also we can speak about all these concepts in a very like romanticized way, no? Like Sadhu Sangha and the company of the holy, and I just get closer to them and I become like enraptured by a wave of wisdom, and here I am now, I'm a wise guy and whatever. But in between there are some considerations to be said, no? Becoming a wise person comes in installments, and each installment will bring its corresponding challenge as well to the non-wise part of ourselves. So because if you say I want to be wise, it means you are not. No, I want to become a sage, it means you are not. So when you expose yourself to the sage-like reality, all the non-sage corners of yourself will become apparent. No? And you have to know what to do with that. You have to be careful not to overreact emotionally, and that can happen, and get fearful about, oh, what's going on, and this wise people is too challenging, I'm feeling too afraid. This is like, whoa, like a roller coaster, and you run to a safer, non-wise situation, which is not safer at all. But that's how we may perceive it in our present condition. So community life in the context of Sadhu Sangha, that's a very interesting point. Of course, many things we can say about community. The very first, I will like to define the very term community, which if you analyze means common unity. So it's not so much about a bunch of people thrown together into one spot in the jungle like here, but there is some common unity underlying the whole thing. I mean, there is a bunch of people together in the jungle, here we are, but there is some underlying background to that, which is common unity or common ideal. There is an ideal that is, let's say, high enough, deep enough to charm all of us, put all of us here together, which all of us are so different, all of us so different people, coming from so different backgrounds and cultures and psychology, and having so many different things, but somehow still we do not kill each other. No. So that speaks for the power of unifying power of the common ideal that brought us together here. For putting that in some way, no? Because it's quite an experiment, no? An ashram. You have people coming from every. I mean, I can name all of the countries you are coming from. We have a whole like parade of international personalities here, no? So and so much influence. But the common ideal is such. And of course, the common ideal can be something nonsensical, which won't last for long. But in this case, the common ideal, which creates a common unity or the community, is so deep and so broad that it can accommodate all differences. And actually, not only, how to say, protect us from our differences, but make those differences shine in its own light as eventually as ornaments. Ideally, ultimately, that's the potentiality of diversity. As they say, diversity is the spice of life. Of course, if you only put diversity and there's no unity, it's like if you put too much spice in your meal, nobody can eat it. So we need diversity, but also we need unity. If you only throw diversity, we will end up killing each other, probably. And if you put only unity and there's no diversity, imagine we speak and everyone agrees on the same things, the same, feels the same. It's like, oh my God, I want some diversity, some conflict, some challenge. So both of them have to be properly combined in the meal, unity and diversity. It's spice, yeah, a little chili, of course, it's important, community chili, diversity, challenging, but unity, no? Common ideal, so we can survive, and not only survive, but actually attain real life. I mean, the context of that die to live, in the words of Hegel, no? Let our false sense of identity dissolve, and our brighter self come to the surface. So community has to do with this, with the notion of embracing an ideal in the spirit of, as Srila Siddhar Maharaj will say, we are means to our ideal, he will say. I really like that quote. He said, we are only a means to our ideal. The ideal is to transpass, he said, transpass us. We are just a medium to the ideal. The ideal is to express through us. The ideal is above. Mm-hmm. So again, and we are units of potential. Mm-hmm. So I have the potential to connect myself with such an ideal that can penetrate my whole being and make me much more of what I am. Make me actualize myself in the most brightest possible version of who I can be. Mm-hmm. So community has to do with that, with a common ideal, with a common sense of unity. And of course, in theory, of course, not everyone on earth thinks in these terms, but technically speaking, everything is community in the sense that there is a common unity of everything, ontologically speaking. We call that sambandha. We can make it even like a synonym between sambandha and community. In Sanskrit, sambandha means sam bandha. So sam means everything, all, complete, and bandha means like tied, like bond. So everything is connected with everything, if you will. Everything has an ontological connection with reality, with the center, accordingly. So for us, the divine Krishna, as we like to call him especially, he's the center of reality, and everything has a connection with him as the center. In other words, in the words of Srila Siddhar Maharaj, the center is everywhere, he will say. In other words, everything that we can conceive has some intrinsic connection with its source. So sambandha means basically the knowledge that helps us to become aware of that reality. Because that's already there. It's not that whether I know it or not, everything has a connection with its center. So if I act according to that knowledge, certain particular result comes. We call that avideya and prayojan. If I am aware, everything is interconnected with the center, and the center is, as every center should be, all attractive, attracting everything to that center. That's the name of Krishna. Krishna means all attractive. So the all attractive center, like a powerful magnet, in a very charming way, resistively calling everything to acknowledge that connection. So if I am aware of that sambandha, then I will act accordingly. Avideya. And then prayojan. Some result will come. If I'm not aware of that, the center still remains the center. It's not that if I think I'm the center, now I'm the center. I'm not the center. Center still is the center. So better I act according to what reality is, which is I'm not the center. But I'm a part, eternally connected with the center. So community has to do with the common unity in reality, in all of existence. So again, even if I'm not aware of community, what community means, still the principle of community is there, of common unity is there. But of course, when we speak about community in motion, in other words, a place with people acknowledging that common unity, underlying reality, and trying to behave accordingly, that's community in motion, in practice. That's the project we are trying to carry on here and in so many other places. Again, the common ideal has to be strong enough as to make all the differences that will arise in the context of community life, which will arise, I can tell you. But the ideal has to be such that it allows for those diversities, differences of opinion, situations, crises, so many things, challenges, struggles. We are individuals, let's be realistic. We are not in Golok Vrindavan yet. So the ideal has to be such that all those things that in another situation could be seen as a threat can become not only harmonized, but again, can enhance the harmony, can enhance the beauty. That's the principle, as Srila Sri Maharaj also liked to describe harmony in musical terms. Harmony means you have many notes, many differences, but all, or many instruments, even if you want, playing different notes, so lots of difference, lots of diversity. You may think, oh my God, that will be chaos. No, every instrument will be killing one another or something. But if they know how to combine one note with another, one instrument with another, instead of having like chaos, cacophony or something, you have harmony. And that's ideal. There's a whole galaxy of diversity, but tied together by a particular way of dealing with that, combining that. And the end result is beautiful. Beauty is enhancing itself. So that's our idea when we go through the experience of community. And in one sense, community not necessarily means you only come to Madhuvan and only here there is community, or only if you have 10 or more people, there is community. If there are only two, no community. The principle of community, again, is underlying in reality. So even if you are alone in an island, somehow there is the principle of community is waiting for you, if you will. You need to know how to live together with your mind, let's say, for example. We spoke the other day about this verse of the Gita and Alma Tranquila. No? The mind is there. How to, Krishna is saying, you have to become the best friend of your mind. It's not so much you have to make your mind your best friend, because the mind is inert, psychic matter. So you have to become the best friend of you have to learn to see your mind as the best friend. And for that, you have to behave as the best friend of your mind. Because again, it's not that there's someone else outside of me against me. I'm the one against my mind in that case. I'm the one feeding my mind with junk food, junk thoughts, junk whatever. And the mind responds accordingly, just as a mirror to show me, this is what you are feeding me with. And it hurts. So now that's why you are feeling this or that. So even in that case, the principle of community applies. Ultimately, if you are surrounded by 100 people in a community, in an ashram, still the principle to begin with is about yourself. And all those people that sometimes may create so many different situations in you, only in one sense reflect back to where are you standing, who you are, what do you want to be, which choices you are taking in relationship with this particular environment, and so on. So again, I remember once I was speaking with one friend of mine in Argentina, and she's a Vaishnava, a practitioner of our tradition, and she has family, husband and three children, and I was speaking with her husband. I don't remember, maybe with the two of them or with some of them. So they live with their family a little bit far from the main community in other state, in other province in Argentina. So they at one point told me, oh, but we are not having Sadhu Sangha for so long or something like that. We were missing so much because devotees were visiting them. And we were missing so much Sadhu Sangha. So we would like to have more of this holy association. And of course the idea immediately came, but you have Sadhu Sangha or not? You are not having Sadhu Sangha on a daily basis? Wife, husband, children? You should become Sadhu Sangha for each other. It's not so much that I want the self-realized saint to visit my house and then I can have Sadhu Sangha. But on a daily basis, we are just ordinary dealing with stuff, with my family, relative issues and all of them. That's not how it works. Of course, it's nice to receive sadhus and things like this. But again, the question had to do when, if we are staying here for a while, we receive this injection of inspiration, enthusiasm, and now some of them continue our journey. So what to do? Well, in one sense, ideally, again, the principle of community is there. You should see how to continue in this spirit of community, common unity, how to find like-minded people with whom you can share your your life, your ideals, and take responsibility for the choices you take. Because sometimes I find people like visiting an ashram like this or others, and when the moment comes that they have to leave, they start like to lament like tragically, like now the end of my life is waiting me outside the door, and many times actually the person is choosing to leave. It's not that the person has to leave. So basically my reply, well, you are choosing to go, you can stay here, you are not forced, no one is forced kicking you out of the place, so it's no problem that you are leaving, but please do not blame the circumstances, or do not create a tragedy out of your own choice, but take responsibility, have integrity. If you want to, if this is the topmost thing, perfect thing that came to your life, why you are going somewhere else? Like an example here or anywhere else. No, it goes to any particular situation. And of course, sometimes it boils down to that, the personal responsibility and all. And of course, some people may say, no, I want to go because I have some, whatever, desires or things that I want to do, and it's okay, nobody's condemning that, but you deal with that in such a way that you are not torturing yourself either, outside, you know? So somehow, yeah, we have to learn how to deal with the principle of community whenever we are, and if we are in a place like this, or in any other community where there is a bunch of practitioners, that's a very nice opportunity to see ourselves through the eyes of others, to see ourselves to the relationship with other people, because the picture we have of ourselves is quite limited if we do not open to see ourselves through other people also. Now, it's not that the only way that I see myself, that's me. There's no other possibility of who I can be. No, if you get to, especially if you get to close to some other people that you get to share again your life intimately, your ideals on a daily basis over prolonged years, that's an interesting experience. I mean, I have had the chance of sharing my life in that way with a few people. Generally, you cannot do that with 16,000 people because, I mean, getting to know a person requires time, you know? And you cannot just like sharing intimacy with that many people because you don't have time to get to know each other on that level that much. But somehow it's important that you get the opportunity to engage in those relationships at least with one person hopefully a little bit more, but at least so you can receive this like feedback, you know, like this proper reference and context of who you are becoming in, because sometimes you can really create a picture of yourself which is quite unrealistic. So it's important to have some landing on earth from someone we know, we trust, that loves us, that wants the best for us. Of course, we may translate all that in the word guru, which with all the different forms this principle may take, but referring to a person that loves us, knows what's the best for us, which is an interesting combination, no? To get close in your life to someone who knows what's the best for you and who wants the best for you. That's not easy to find, basically. Maybe you can find people who want the best for you, but they don't have a clue what's the best for them. So maybe they don't have a clue what's the best for you. And with good intention, they might end up creating harm to one another. That can happen. There's no bad intention, there's good intention, but there is ignorance. So we're required to combine the two, proper knowledge. But I can have proper knowledge and know what's best for you, but if I don't have that intention and I don't share that, that may be, I'm engaging, as they say, in the sin of omission. You have the sins of commission and the sins of omission. Commission is when I engage in something that is unhealthy, and omission means when I could do something good for you, but I'm not doing that. I'm just like remain a passive witness without exercising my potential. So when we get the chance of getting close to people that know what's best for us and want the best for us, I mean, for at least in our consideration is, I mean, you have to give yourself in that direction, because that's a jewel that you won't find here and there and everywhere. And of course, in that connection comes a whole interesting line of dynamics, because if the person loves you and knows you, and knows you very intimately, means knows you in every possible way, knows your brightest potential and knows your darkest hours, if you will. That's, I mean, you are exposed to vulnerability. Fine living with someone that I know he or she knows all these like embarrassing things about myself, I mean, for the ego, that's not flattering. That's like, oof, like, but if we are intelligent and humble, we will understand, I need that. I need to keep a close company of those who really know me, in front of whom I cannot make any show. I cannot make like, oh, pretense like I'm this, I'm that, and everyone may believe and not notice and applaud that. But someone who really knows who I am, and if I'm going out of the proper path, that person lovingly will mention that to me. And I have to have the courage to accept that and to allow myself to be transformed by that proximity, by that relationship. So my point is, in community life, that thing happens a lot. Different levels, because there are different levels of connection between different members of one community and another. And it's not that you want to mess into the intimate life of each other in a gossip-like way, but it's like a natural thing that happens. You start to live together with someone, you start to know the people, you have to share things, communicate, and when communicating, there are so many things that each one speaks their own language. I mean, I'm not saying literally in Finnish or English or Spanish, but speak their own language in terms of their own way of saying things, of thinking things, of doing things. And again, suddenly all these people are put together in one single place, and they have to manage to, again, not kill one another and survive and be happy on top of that and so many other things. And that requires so much, so much. And I could be saying 1 hour so much, skill in communication, for example, in dialogue. That's so difficult. I mean, it sounds so easy, so simple, but emotion in practice, oh my gosh. To learn how to say things properly, to learn how to hear the other person, to learn to understand what the other person means, what it is saying to you something, and you are not getting the wrong picture of that and acting. I mean, that takes time. That takes time. Sometimes we take it for granted. Oh, let's go for something higher. But in practice, you realize, oh my God, no, I say something and this causes anxiety. And of course, sometimes the other person is responsible for taking things wrongly and that's their anxiety. But sometimes I could have said things in a more considerate way. I couldn't take the time to be empathic with the reality of the other person and what's the best way to say whatever thing. And even to make sure that the other person understood myself properly. And there's this interesting system called, maybe you heard about that, nonviolent communication by Marshall Rosenberg. He says some interesting things, of course, which are quite connected with our tradition. One of them is, that's, again, it sounds like embarrassing and simple, but he said, when you speak with someone and you tell that person you have a necessity. He speaks a lot about necessities, how we are frustrated in life because of unfulfilled necessities, and anger, for example, is basically that. When you are angry, sorry?
He says needs, yeah?
Yeah, yeah. So he said, when you are angry, that means you have a necessity and it was not fulfilled. It's not happening, so you express it through anger. You are just telling to the world, I need this and it's not happening. You may not even be aware of that, but your anger speaks for that. So be sure, he said, when you express what you need, that the other person understood what you said. And he says, how you ask the person, please, what did you understand of what I just told you? And again, it sounds like, oh my God, that's embarrassing. How can I tell the other person? But he was sharing experiments that were done in that regard, and generally the other people do not get it. You say something and the other person repeats what they understood, and there was like a totally different picture. Whether because lack of capacity of understanding what you were saying, or lack of capacity in you expressing what you need, or the two of them put together, you can imagine. So, and then you will think, oh, why did you do that? I told you this other thing, and the person understood a totally different picture. So it's important that we, to begin with, we learn to, for example, to figure out what do we need. That's not so simple. And that's one of the main problems, that we don't know what do we need. And we just go in life without a clue about that. Without goals, without certain determined projections, and how do you expect that certain things are fulfilled when you yourself don't have an idea what do you want? So that's an important thing, to ascertain necessities, and of course necessities based ideally on a certain level of awareness and knowledge, because there are many so-called necessities which are not that needed at all. But the ones we really need, I mean, we need to figure them out and we need to express them, because in many cases we will only obtain, fulfill those necessities with the help of others. It's not only that I will reach them by myself, I don't need you anymore. So sometimes we need to be clear in our expression of those things. So community has a lot to do with those things. When we feel challenges or problems or conflicts in relationships among one another, that happens in every ashram. It's not that you go to an ashram and everyone is floating in their own personal cloud or something like that. You know, it may, the first day may seem like that, but just come with us for 1 week. And again, it's not when I'm saying this, I'm not saying everyone is fighting with one another, the other extreme, but they are just situations. You know? And those situations are part of the purpose of an ashram. An ashram is a hospital, if you will. A hospital where people voluntarily go and acknowledge, I'm sick, I want to get cured, I want to get enlightened, but I'm not. So I'm coming to an ashram to get cured. So it implies, I mean, you cannot go to a hospital and expect everyone to be sane, to be healthy. That's not it. I mean, the idea is that they get healthy, but most of them are work in progress. No? So to be, just to be realistic and not just to be like naive and idealistic and all blah, blah. And of course we will find different levels of people there in the hospital, different levels of enlightenment and awakening and so on, but we shouldn't be like terrorized by those things. It's like if we go to a hospital, oh, there's a sick person there. I mean, you are not in the cinema or in the shopping mall, you're in the hospital, so everyone will be sick. So it's not about being sick or not being sick, but what can we do to get healthier and healthier, and how we can help each other, being sick as we are, to help us stop become more and more healthy. So that's, again, that takes time, that takes communication, that takes sitting and speaking. I mean, I can speak that for me, my personal case, in connection to these relationships that are quite close to me, that I have had the chance of, for example, living together with some of them for 20 years or so. I mean, if you live with someone for 20 years and you have survived that, it means some interesting things have happened. But if I have to count the hours that we have spent into knowing each other and hearing each other and understanding each other and speaking to each other, I mean, I never made the calculation, but it's a lot. It's a lot. I mean, multiply maybe months of just sitting and speaking and trying to understand the other constellation, if you will. Because again, there's a common ideal and that's tying us very strongly, but still there's so many other different things that again, when properly dovetailed, if you will, they make beauty. You have two different people that potentially could kill one another because of being so different, but actually they are becoming best friends or something. And that's again the same thing we have to do with our own minds, because at the end of the day it has to do with how we deal with our own minds, with ourselves in relation with others. If you are not healthy enough, dealing with your own self with enough integrity, do not expect that your community relationship will be brilliant or something. So it's an important thing. And again, as we mentioned, sadhu sangha is not a means only, but a goal. So goal means you will have community in the goal, at least in our particular goal. We are not projecting ourselves to undifferentiated Brahman. When there is no community, there is no sense of community, there is no sense of anything. But we are projecting ourselves to Golok Vrindavan, which means huge community. There's lots of people everywhere. and on a daily basis you are sharing with, whether you are a gopi, whether you are a gopa. I mean, you analyze the dynamics of the daily life of Krishna in the spiritual world. I mean, always there's movement and people and community and interaction. So my point is, we are preparing in this community to enter that community. So how do I live my community experience here in such a way that leads me to the community experience there? So that's the whole idea. It's not just, I come here to have a nice time and that's all right. I mean, for us who want to commit ourselves to the practice, this community has to eventually grow and blossom into a community that is non-different from the ultimate community. That's the way how Sadhu Sangha is transporting you from one place to the other, basically. And of course, there may be a long way to go in that connection, but that's how it works. When you realize that same community, oh, we are here, oh, we are there now. Like when the Brajavasis, Krishna showed the Brajavasis your next life, and they showed exactly the same thing they were in. Like, oh, we're here, oh, now we are there. Oh, okay, great. It's something like that. Anyhow, we can continue speaking about that. That's a nice topic, but also there are some questions here and some questions here.
Follow-up?
Yes, yes.
When Guru Maharaj was speaking about, I don't remember what, but he mentioned that topic of us as a training ground here for spiritual life, or I mean, a different dimension, or we, you know what I mean, like what you just spoke about, here we train. So I understand that each one of us have a different background of maybe, who knows, times immemorial we might be training in family situations, or we've had Lata Sangha before, so we have different sensibilities how to relate with each other. But how much should we put emphasis on seeing interactions with people here as beneficial for building transcendental relationships?
Can you clarify a little?
Like, say, I'm interacting with Gayatri, and our interaction is building some kind of an attribute in myself that I can then translate to having a sort of interpersonal relationship. How much can I see that interpersonal relationship and the things that I develop through that interpersonal material relationship?
No material. Why material?
Okay, yeah, sure, yeah. then there's, to juxtapose that to somebody who is just sitting on top of a mountain, they never have a chance of doing any of that. Like, they never had a family. They never know what it is to love your child. So is that an advantage to have a family if you're wanting to relate with Krishna in a way? Like, now I remember the Guru Maharaj was talking about, like, Krishna as a child, you know, he's playing. So now I have my own child. Now I can really, like, get into the mood of, okay, Krishna is a child. Now I can understand all these, like, kids are like that. So now I'm drawing so much experience from that. And now I can, like, in my Lila Shmaranam, for instance, I can really have, like, the base built up. So is there any validity to that?
There are, like, 108 questions there. But yeah, to begin with, again, whatever interaction we are having here, for example, in the ashram experience, and we are dealing with some relativities of our personality, if you will, but there is a way of dealing with that in such a way that it's not a material thing. No? Ideally, that's the beauty and power of bhakti, no? That we are dealing with each other, we are struggling with each other in community life, if you will, with our own particular samskars, materially acquired samskars or impressions from time without beginning, if you will. But we can deal with that in a way that is not material, but it's in a way that it's part of the bhakti project, if you will. It's part of the eternal project. So it's not that we need to create this dichotomy between material and spiritual. I mean, we can create that, and that's our choice and problem, but ideally, there should not be a separation between the two. At least in our particular school, bhakti, I mean, Sangha Siddha Bhakti, we spoke last Sunday. I won't enter into the details now, but every activity we perform can be infused with the ideal, with the concept of bhakti, and therefore become part of of that lifestyle, become part of that goal. So that to begin with. Regarding the one meditating on the mountain and the cave, probably that person doesn't want to enter Golok Vrindavan. It can happen. Of course, you can meet someone being there. But my point is, when you are speaking about Lila Smaranam and empathizing with the experience of the Lila, but of course, these are not cheap things. No, I mean, we shouldn't speak about those things like very quickly or cheaply. I mean, we need to understand many things before actually entering to that. We need to have many things in place about before we compare our human experience with Krishna Lila in a fully accomplished way. That's not so easy. It's not that, okay, I'll have some children and I will empathize with Yashoda or something. I mean, this is not like, it won't work like just by that. No, I mean, we need to have in place so many things in terms of tattva and siddhanta and understanding who Krishna is ontologically as God, so many degrees of Aishvarya to contextualize what we call the human-like pastimes. Of course, if we do so, and Guru Maharaj of course mentions that, you can have these glimpses. No? When you glimpse at human interaction and human emotionality, you have a glimpse of what Krishna Lila is about, because our God, technically speaking, is human. I mean, he lives his life as human. If you study Krishna's life in Vrindavan, he conducts himself in human terms. Here and there, sometimes he does something pretty out of the norm. No, he lifts one heel for 7 days with a pinky finger and something like that. But those are like exception to the rule. No? The general rule on a daily basis is that Krishna is one more in the village, of course one more, but everyone is revolving around his beauty and charm. But nonetheless, he's behaving not as God, not at all. So in that sense, of course, it's important that we draw from our human experiences some glimpses of what Krishna Lila is about, but at the same time we should be very careful of not thinking that we already got it. Oh, now I know. Oh, I have a child. Now I understood. I mean, what does it mean to be whatever? To have Krishna as my son, or to... I mean, we have to transcend so many things to fully understand what's that about. For example, when we hear, I don't know, about Radha and Krishna, and Krishna being the supreme male and Radha being the supreme female, what does it mean, male and female? That male and that female, because you can speak about, I wouldn't use the word transgender, like transcendence to gender in this case, because the word is generally tied to other idea, but like super gender, no? But what that super gender they exhibit, you will understand only when you transcend your gender here, no? So that may take time to go beyond male gender, female sense of gender, to understand the notion of gender in the Lila, which seems similar to here. Again, you hear Krishna Lila uninformed and you think, man, it sounds almost like my autobiography in many things, if you will. So many things I can make comparisons, and this happened and this mess and this game and this whatever. No? But when you start to really get not so naive but more informed, you start to perceive, oh my God, there is a huge gap here. From Krishna Lila to Vaikuntha, what to speak from Krishna Lila to my childhood quote-unquote pastimes. So all this process has to take place for us not to be misled in the name of appreciating Krishna Lila, or trying to connect our human experience with Krishna Lila, which we should, but again, it is an art to do so. It's not just, again, let's have family and I got a very clear picture of what does it mean to live in community in Golok Vrindavan. Hopefully, but not necessarily. I mean, so many things have to be in place for that to happen. But of course, that said, there's huge potential in our experience as humans for having that glimpse also. And our acharyas have emphasized that. Now, be careful of, in the name of transcendence, not becoming too non-human, if you will, too much superhuman, to the point that your heart becomes kind of indifferent to certain human sensibilities that have to be there for you to be able to interact with the reality of Krishna Lila. So we want to be to remain human, but to upgrade our humanity, our humanness, in a very specific way, to match somehow Krishna's humanness, Krishna's human-like pastime. So again, in community, we can have a glimpse of that, and not only a glimpse. The more the glimpses of men become, they became a portal. At that one point, let's go there. And we go to that next dimension, if you will. So in that sense, community life, ashram experience can become eventually one moment in eternity, if you will. No? I mean, we should be having those types of glimpses, basically. No? We should, at least in theory, have a clear picture of what I want for me in my life and what I want to do for eternity. That's a good question you can ask. What do I want to do for eternity? And hopefully your life, is present life, is matching that standard. Because if in eternity you will like to be doing something and you are doing now exactly the opposite, maybe difficult that you will get there if you are not doing something now about it. So gradually, ideally, our life, daily life, should be conducted in such a way that it matches eternity. How you see yourself doing that forever. Or forever with divine love, again, because when we hear, I don't know, Bhaktivinoda Thakur, his eternal service is to prepare camphor lamps. I mean, if you don't have prem and you have divine, okay, let's make camphor lamp. For how long, Maharaj? For eternity. Even if I tell you for 5 hours, you start like to, I think I can deal with that for a while, but 5 hours. And tomorrow I tell you, okay, 5 more hours of camphor lamps. And next day, guess what? A whole week of camphor lamps, only that seva. And it's like, oh my God. But he's doing that for eternity. Of course, he's not only doing that, but somehow that's his main engagement for eternity. And externally, we may say, making comfort land for eternity doesn't sound too exciting. Yeah, because you see that through the eyes of absence of love. But when you are doing that for the one you love, and that one you love is the most lovable person, and you have the highest type of love, even the most, externally speaking, insignificant thing becomes so full of meaning and purpose that you can spend eternity literally doing camphor lamp for your beloved. When you are in love, you're like, I mean, externally you're doing something, but internally is the real offering. The real thing is going on beyond the the outer form. No? So, anyhow, I think it's important to have that idea that, yes, whatever we are dealing with now in community, even as relative as it may be, it has the potential of being connected with our ultimate attainment. That's possible. Krishna can spiritualize all these dealings and even make them part of the lila, if you will. Even if some devotee is a little bit, how do you say in English, like grumpy. I've met some of them. I mean, many. But I've met some of them who are really advanced, very saintly personalities. But Krishna made the arrangement to retain in them this grumpiness. But there's a grumpiness in the context of all a bunch of qualities and love and dedication and humility and so many wonderful things that grumpiness now becomes like an ornament. It's like charming, you know, when that person shows the grumpiness with that backdrop. Basically, of course, you cannot imitate that. So now I have license for being grumpy. If you are there, that's another thing. Right? But sometimes you see that, and that's why scriptures say, "Be careful of judging sadhus because of some defect, not only in their physical body," Rupa Goswami say, "but even in their psychic body." So you may call grumpiness a psychic fault, but if the person is totally free from selfishness and exploitation, is totally surrendered, Krishna himself may have chose to, okay, let's leave that there. And even if you analyze the characters of the lila, you find grumpiness and you find so many other things in some of these characters, but all of that is adding to the whole equation there. Again, it's not an excuse to remain grumpy if you are one, but that speaks about the power of bhakti. mostly. That about our grumpiness and whatever, no? So I mentioned that in the sense of things that we may think they are relative, they are to be transcended, and you try to do so, but sometimes Krishna may make an arrangement in the context of bhakti to retain some expression, some form of that, with a higher purpose in mind, with a higher service or something. Anyhow, I hope this helps. You have some any other question here? The ones present physically? Yes? Can you remind me your name?
I'm Eleanor.
Eleanor.
Thanks for having me.
No, thank you.
I'm curious about the spiritual life because there's been so much suffering in my life and wanting to overcome that. And with that, in my past, I do have a lot of regrets. Mistakes were made. And so there's a lack of trust in myself. So how do I know now that I have the mindfulness that I do make mistakes, how can I trust myself going forward that I will make the right decision for me?
Mm. Okay. So welcome to the club to begin with. The afflicted club. Krishna says in the Gita, there are four types of people who generally approach spirituality and the divine. Jnani jignyasur artarti, what is? Artha jignyasur artarti jnani chavartarti. You say one of them, some people approach God for, material well-being, money and things like that. Sisidauji Gopal ki jai. Some people for knowledge, some people out of wisdom, and some people approach God, maybe the most of them, because of being afflicted. It's being suffering and suffering so much that just the only thing that one wants is, I want to stop suffering. Which is not the same as we think we spoke the other day, as being happy, but we have to begin somewhere. So if the main norm is I'm suffering, and we may be suffering horrendously on different levels, and again, not to play the victim, but just to be objective about what we are experiencing in our minds, because suffering is actual experience in the mind. So we need to first stop suffering, and then we can speak about other things, being happy and all these nice things you say about Krishna and the spirit. But first, I'm suffering so much. I need to know how to stop this whole thing. No? So it's okay. It's okay that we may approach God with that attitude in the beginning. He himself accepts that because he acknowledges that's a fact. That's going. That's happening. Now, of course, I'm giving a general answer. I don't know the details of your particular situation, and each particular situation is unique, and so many things at some point also are important to know, to give a further accurate picture. But yeah, in general, many of us, I enter into your same club, no? I approach spirituality because I was in a full existential crisis, suffering like from tip to toe, and with the intention of being happy, but not knowing what to do. I'm being totally like bewildered and acting out of instinct here and there, but ending in so many dead ends and causing even harm to others without wanting that. But that ended like that, so that created further harm for myself. So at one point you feel like, I want to stop this snowball that is like getting more and more entanglement, and how to get free from that. And of course the story has a happy end, here we are, but still we struggle on a daily basis, as we spoke before, but in some level we got to receive some relief, some knowledge, some light, some hope. There is hope to begin with. We need to live with that hope. If we don't have the trust, that hope, we are dead, basically. We are suicidal. There's no further meaning. So regarding what you mentioned, we may have committed mistakes in the past. We must have. raise your hand if you, I don't know what does it mean to be mistaken in the past. Let's be human to begin with. Let's be realistic. So we have committed more mistakes than the one we can acknowledge, even, because we are not aware sometimes what's a mistake and what's not a mistake. So we are only able to sometimes to grasp those mistakes that we know, oh yeah, this was wrong, But so many things were also wrong that we were not able to know. But the point is that we are to deal with that in a way that it's sustainable for us. No, we cannot just live with full of resentment towards ourselves. Sometimes we live with resentment towards others, which is a very weird mixture of self-pity and hatred and victim consciousness. There are so many things sometimes in play in these types of models. But many times we are just being too strict with ourselves in the way of, okay, I was so mistaken so many times, and I created so much nonsense and so much overwhelming and chaos and so many things that at one point you think, well, I don't have any trust that in the future I may take the proper decision. But at the same time, if you choose to enter into that like avenue and conclude in that direction, I don't think that you feel, oh, this is getting better. No? By thinking in this way, it's not that, oh, now a new sense of hope is coming. No, that's not happening. No, things are getting clearer to me and a brighter horizon is coming. That's not happening. But only you get into a more and more nihilistic, is it? No? Perspective. And at one point you become totally paralyzed. You cannot do anything because you have lost total trust about what you can be. And the point is that we have to learn from those mistakes. For sure, we are to acknowledge those past mistakes, because again, as the saying goes, those who do not learn from the past are doomed to repeat it in the present. No? So we are to take responsibility, I would say, for whatever we did. I'm not saying guilt and shame, but responsibility. There are two different things. Responsibility is actual freedom. I mean, we are after freedom, but freedom comes with responsibility. No? Taking the reins of your own life and becoming, acknowledging who you were and what you want to be. So, even if you feel, I cannot trust in myself, well, the reply is, you have to. You must. You have to learn how. I mean, if you cannot do that, you won't survive, basically. Life will be too overwhelming for you. And you will feel just like, this is too much, and we know so many people, unfortunately, choosing to end their lives as if that will be the solution, but that continues in their next birth and so on. So we may have made so many mistakes, yes, and that's even to an embarrassing point, something that we may not even able to confess. Sometimes we reach that point, like, and we became so ashamed of ourselves. But the point is, that's not the full picture of who we are. No? We have to be careful of over identifying ourselves with that limited version of ourselves. Yeah, that's a limited version of ourselves, us acting in ignorance, us acting without proper knowledge, without proper education, with good intention, probably, hopefully, but without having the guidelines to know what's life, who I am, what to do, where to search. So it's obvious that the end result will be a mess. We have to acknowledge that, but we are not to overstress, that's me, only that's me. And because that's when you start like to suffocate your potential. You cannot be anything else apart from that. And you are always reminded, you did this, you are this, you cannot be. And of course you become paralyzed. No hope, no change. And of course life doesn't work like that. Again, all of us will become suicidal and that's the end of the story. But we need to upgrade that situation and to understand, whatever I have done, whatever I have gone through in the past, as messy as it was, as embarrassing as it was, as disastrous, again, I don't know the details of your story, or maybe many of our story, and many of us have gone through messy stuff, and we can, it's no time here to share our non-authorized biographies, but I'm sure, if we are in a place like here, for sure we have done some considerable nonsense and going through some messy periods to reach a point that I want to give some 180 degrees change in my life. So okay, that's there. We are not denying that, but that's not the end of the story, and that's not our fullest expression of ourselves. We need to put ourselves into a new situation, into a new environment, under a new knowledge and a new education, and see how what happens as a result of that. And I'm sure the ghosts from the past may come and try to remind this, remind that. And that's, of course, our own struggle and our own daily challenge to, okay, that's there. I'm not denying that, but I'm to learn from that. I'm not just to return from the present to the past and get stuck there, and that's me. That's not me. No, I'm not that. Still, I'm not all that I could be in the present, but I'm a little bit closer to that than I was in the past. In the past, I was maybe totally bewildered and behaving who knows how, or surrounded by who knows which situation, again. But now we are trying to get things more straight and put our house in order, if you will, and trying to lead our life with higher ideals, with more enlightened choices, with more well-wishing people around us. And again, it will take time, but I think if you are doing that on some level, you can also pay attention to the fruits of that. There is some result. It's not that nothing is happening and it's always the same thing no matter what I do. It's not like this. It's not that, I become a serial killer or I become a saint. It's the same. If the symptoms are the same, I will feel the same. No, you won't. And if you tell you feel the same, I mean, you are like a clinical case. The most dangerous person on earth. No, I can be a Hitler, I can be a whatever, a Buddha. I feel the same. What's going on with you? So, phalena pariccate, you can judge the tree by its fruits. So if you can feel some positive change is coming into my life, some ray of hope is coming, do not expect the whole change to come in a weekend or something. No? It will take time because so many layers of impressions we acquire from many years, what to speak, previous lifetimes, I mean, that would be too much to remember them all. That's why we cannot remember them. Just this lifetime is enough. So we are to heal all those things, and we are to heal them. We are not to deny them. We are not to bury them into the unconscious. We are to learn from them, acknowledge them, without the necessity of blaming people, without the necessity of finding enemies, but trying to forgive if we have to forgive other people, to forgive if we have to forgive ourselves. Because that's sometimes the most difficult part. And understand that I am created, quote unquote, we are not created from a one time point in time, but I've been conceived by God in such a way that a very beautiful and bright potential is accompanying me. So I am to honor that, because that's part of what has been put in me by providence, by the divine. I cannot miss that part and only insist on the dark part or the limited side. That's only the shadow. No, I mean, you can choose to look at the shadow, or you can choose to look at the original from which the shadow is coming. So again, it may take time, but in proper environment, in proper company, with proper guidelines in life, proper knowledge guiding our actions, we will gradually get it a deeper and deeper taste and experience, and that will give us like some confidence and some trust in I can do it. I mean, I have been doing these things, I feel a change, I feel better. So it means I can do it. I mean, it's not that I cannot do it. Maybe I cannot do this yet, but I can do this. So you also try to set goals that you can sustain. No, do not just point to the moon in one weekend. No, so try to set goals that you can improve yourself, and you feel, oh, I was able to do that. And you can feel, not from a proud side, I was able, I can do it. Because we are dependent on so many things and love and people, but we have to do our part. So try to set goals in your life that you can do the needful, whatever you have to do, that you can do it, and you can feel, oh, it was possible. So that gives renowned hope, a new level of strength that will allow you in the next challenge, if you will, to set a higher goal, reach there, a higher goal, reach there, a little bit higher, not, again, that high, because you may feel discouraged and frustrated, but sustainable. Because also we have to advance in some direction. It's not that I remain in the same place forever. I mean, we don't want that. We want to live the place where we are internally and we want to grow. So it's possible. Again, there is hope, and again, it's important to be surrounded by those people who will also remind us those things when we forget those things and we become distracted, and again, become obsessed with our shadow only, and over-identifying with, oh, I did this, oh, I did that, and again, if we made even the worst possible mistake on earth, if you are repenting in a sincere way, life goes on. Because there has to be a formula to go on after making some mistake. If there is no formula, you are stuck in that mistake forever. So if there is sincere repentance and you try to build your life accordingly to how to continue without engaging in that same thing again, there's no reason for going over and over and over back there. And if, of course, for some reason we are going back, maybe because there's something still we have not fully solved with that particular situation, we need to close that chapter, make full circle. Again, I'm speaking in a general way without knowing the specifics, but generally those things are there. So, because if not, we will have like a ghost following us wherever we go, because we have not solved certain chapters of our past. So we need to close them, at least those we are aware of and we feel, yeah, still they are disturbing me. We need to know what to do with them, and life goes on. So again, I'm giving a general overview, but there is hope, and we should gather the strength to build that confidence, especially if we have built the opposite for some time. Now it may take some, but we have to invest, to use our determination and intelligence and invest in that direction, understanding I need that. If I don't have that, I probably won't stay alive. That's for any of us. If you don't have some confidence, some faith, faith is the active principle in life. Krishna says that in Gita, Shradayama Purushi Purusham. You are your faith. So if you don't have faith, with faith, in this case, it's a sense of trust, a sense of confidence. If you don't have confidence that, now lunch is being served there. No? So if you don't have some trust that, okay, what they cooked won't kill me, you won't have lunch. You will be paralyzed in front of the plate because I don't trust who cooked, I don't trust what's there. And whatever, anything else, if you don't have trust that by standing up you can walk and not fall, you will remain seated falling all life or something. Maybe the roof will fall, so I stay. You follow? If there's no some level of faith or trust, you become totally paralyzed. As one of our gurus says, suspicion leads to suspension. So we need to gradually, according to our present capacity, but to invoke higher and higher layers of confidence, more and more self-confidence. And that will empower us with humility at the same time again. So it's possible. It's possible. We have to gather the proper determination, the proper support, the proper environment, the proper understanding. It may take time, but it's important to be working on that. It's a project that may take a lifetime. No problem, no rush. We want to learn the proper lessons as long as they take. But, so we are promoted to the next and the next and the next. So, anyhow, I hope that helps on some level. Thank you so much for the courage to present your case and open the situation. That's in itself part of the solution, I would say. Because many people are not even able to acknowledge that, or if they acknowledge internally, not to put that in words externally. So to reach that point of having that particular courage, that shows that already the process is going on nicely. So it's just a matter of time, basically. Thank you. So sorry for the ones who sent. I'm seeing here 1, 2, 3 questions on the chat. What to do? Here we concentrated today mainly on the ones present here, with your permission or without it. Sorry. And now lunch is about to be served. Sisi Dauji Gopal have already honored Boga, so now it had become Mahaprasad. So we are about to let's join together in community and honor Prasad here with some friends and guests. So we will, with your permission, put our discussion to rest here, and hopefully we meet each other next Sunday with our Guru Maharaj's call. And for those who would like, tomorrow, Monday, we will have one more Q&A, unfortunately not at this time, so for some of you will be almost impossible or at least too late to connect, but it will be at, I wish, 7:30 EST time. Eastern means? Yeah, Eastern time. So those who would like, invited there, and if not, we keep in touch somehow or other. Shri Gurudev ki jai, Shriman Mahaprabhu ki jai, Shri Harinam Prabhu ki jai, Shri Dauji Gopal ki jai, Gaur Bhakta Vrinda ki jai, Gaur Praman Haribo.